Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is Rick Robinson, Vice President and General Manager of AgeTech Collaborative from AARP. Rick is at the forefront of developing and accelerating new solutions that empower older adults to live better. Rick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
That's great. So let's start with you and your role at AARP. Tell us a little about the AgeTech Collaborative and what it does.
Well, the AgeTech Collaborative is something we launched about 2.5 years ago. We started from nothing, and it was an idea. And the idea was, how do we pull together everybody who is in the AgeTech ecosystem or who wants to be? And that includes big companies, investors, startups, testbed organizations, hospitals, everybody who realizes that there's a huge wave continuing to crash of people, frankly, turning 60, 65. And these people are very tech savvy compared to, say, 20 years ago. And they demand better products, better services. And we realized there really isn't a convening place, a place for everybody to come together and, frankly, help each other produce better products and services for the market. So we started by creating an accelerator program, which brings in startup companies throughout the year. We run pitch competitions, and it's kind of an arduous filtering process. We fortunately get a lot of companies applying, wanting to be part of the collaborative. So we go through this process, and afterward, we invite a handful of companies into our program on a quarterly basis. After that, we sometimes invest in those companies, and then they graduate into what we call the AgeTech Collaborative ecosystem. So it's a continuum. You have startups going through this process. Once they pass the process, they come into the collaborative ecosystem. And in that ecosystem, it's an online community. It's a platform that we've built. People log on and they can interact. They can engage. They can reach out to investors. They can reach out to, you know, big enterprises that we've got in the collaborative. Or enterprises can reach out to startups and say, hey, you're going after a problem that we see our members or our customers wanting, but we don't have a solution. Let's work together. So in this environment, we now have well over 600 companies. We're charging toward 1,000, but and that's well over 200 startups. So we've got this very vibrant community of all these different players. And importantly, investors, and these are VCs, small investors, more and more folks in the Valley are realizing that this is a huge opportunity. So we're trying to attract them as well. And because if you're able to attract some of these bigger investors, more influential investors, they're going to say to entrepreneurs who maybe are working on the next social AI app to say, wait a minute, let's take that enthusiasm and expertise and technology and apply it toward older adults, because frankly, there's a lot more money there, to be blunt, and there's a huge need, and there's a captive audience that frankly hasn't been served well in, I don't know, n number of years. So in this AgeTech Collaborative ecosystem, we brought all these different companies and people together, and what we're finding is connections being made. Lots of startups are combining forces for new products. Some of them are integrating their products together. We've got a number of big corporations, as I mentioned before, who are tapping some startups, bringing them into the fold. Some of this stuff only happens on the platform. You can't really talk about it, but there's been acquisitions. It's exciting to see something that, we just frankly made up, like I said, 2.5 years ago when we launched.
It's amazing.
And it's a very active, fertile ecosystem now.
That's terrific. Now, so you mentioned that organizations are kind of organically finding each other and collaborating and perhaps, combining resources or merging, et cetera. Is that something that's fostered by AARP directly or the AgeTech Collaborative directly, or is that just kind of an organic byproduct of creating this ecosystem?
You know, it's both. Once companies come into the collaborative, once they're accepted in, each of them gets assigned essentially an account manager, somebody on the team who really understands everybody in the collaborative backward and forward, understands their needs, and is able to make connections. So we've got a small team of experts who can, take outreach from all the different companies and who might be like, look, I was looking for a startup that did this, or I was looking for a test bed where we can trial our product and I wasn't able to find it. Or, sometimes people just don't take the time to search. Okay. So they reach out to their account manager and the account manager is like, okay. And they go to work and they make the connections.
That's true.
And the goal is, to bring people together who otherwise wouldn't have connected. And that's what we see over and over again, is people sort of saying, wow, I didn't know, that company was doing this. This is awesome. So yeah, we have account managers who actually help bring people together, but then the organic component, the self-directed people can go on the platform, log in and find each other. They can send direct messages over the platform. And then there's public forums. So both of them, I guess, is the answer, both ways.
That's terrific. So what role does the AgeTech, or how does the AgeTech Collaborative define AgeTech?
Yeah.
And what role do you see AgeTech playing, shaping the future of aging? It seems like you're having a huge impact already in just a couple of years.
Yeah, I think we are having an impact. That's very rewarding. We've got, we don't rest on our laurels though. So it's always like the next big goal. And, we define what we do is very simply, we are here to make aging easier for everyone. That's kind of our mission, I guess you could say.
Very focused. So, I like that.
Yeah. So it's very simple, pretty broad. So that's what the collaborative is here to do. And I think we are continuing to move things forward. We're trying all different kinds of new things. We show up in person at major events like Health and Vive and lots of others. We're doing something tomorrow with Wired Magazine in person, an event. We show up at CES, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and your listeners are familiar with. We often have a very large space there. Last year, or I should say earlier this year, we had, I think it was 14,000 square feet, including a full pickleball court. And the reason we do that is not just, oh, wow, it's to get people who otherwise wouldn't think about this space as being a vibrant target, if you will, for products and services, to say, oh, I had no idea. And that's often what we hear. Not so much over the past year, but in the last few years, early on, it was like, what is AARP doing here at CES with a huge space with all this technology? And once we're able to tell the story of, frankly, the numbers that are involved and the trillions of dollars that are being spent by people over 50 in this area. And again, as I mentioned, the space is only getting bigger. Once we're able to tell that story, people are like light bulb and realize, I get it now.
Sure. So innovation can sometimes move faster than the day-to-day realities of the people it's designed to serve. How do you balance innovation with the practical needs of older adults?
Yeah, that's a good question. I love taking bleeding edge technology. Let's call it agentic AI today. It's on the lips of everybody you talk to, probably, and making it accessible. So we've done that throughout the years in the collaborative with some of our companies, including some of the products we built ourselves, using, say, VR several years ago to build environments for older adults to fight loneliness and social isolation. And we did it in a way where the technology, to some degree, disappears and the experience comes into the fore. So we've done that with AR as well, augmented reality, as have some of our startups. We're doing it now with AI. And yes, we want to kind of show the technology to a degree so people understand and get excited by it, but also do it in a way where, as I said before, the technology itself sort of disappears and the value jumps to the fore and people are wowed by it, but not scared by it.
Interesting. Sure.
So that's what we try to do.
That makes perfect sense. And I know we have seen that through the pandemic, there has been significant adoption of technology by older adults. Some of it is certainly that the boomers are aging in. They're you know, I guess statistically more comfortable with technology. But also, I think the world was forced to figure out things like Zoom and online ordering and all of these other sorts of things. Have you seen that? I know that AgeTech has only been around for, you know, 2-3 years, but is that something that you've seen in your experience as well?
Yes, definitely. Through the pandemic, it has driven people to everything from telehealth to just using consumer digital devices and applications like they wouldn't necessarily have before. And it's not because of lack of ability or acuity. It was, I would say, visibility. So during COVID, it was sort of became more visible because it was necessary. And therefore, you know, a lot of older adults, we've got a lot of data on this with the research that we do every year, embraced this technology. I think there's kind of two humps I think about in my head where people, older adults, really grasped how to use modern digital technology. And one is maybe kind of an eye roller, but let's say, you know, going back 10 years in Facebook Mobile, the Facebook app. Now, Facebook Meta didn't go about, hey, let's see if we can drive traffic among older adults. I'm pretty sure of that. But by dint of the fact that so many people's families are posting content on Facebook, older adults realize this is how I'm going to see what's going on with my family. So I'm going to learn this platform and very quickly learn how to manipulate a mobile application. And once you're able to do that with a Facebook app, which is not the simplest app, people realize, oh, wow, I can do this here. I can do this with a lot of different things. I can do
it with
Uber. I can order an Uber. I can, you know, and so on and so forth. So I don't have data on this, but I really suspect that this is was a major driver. And then comes along the pandemic, as horrible as that was, the upside is it did drive, as you pointed out, people to use even more of this technology, both lower their threshold of concern. Some people are a little maybe tepid about, you know, having a physician visit over a video or what have you. Now, you know, fully embraced, you know, everything from virtual exercise to, you know, we've had startups that pair older adults and young people in college as companions, you know, all this sort of thing.
That's interesting.
Like people fully embraced.
Yeah, because we've seen a lot of that offline where communities are trying to have that intergenerational, you know, impact with local universities. So that's you know, interesting to hear you talk about the technological means to make that happen as well.
Yeah. And I should say that a number of our startups do drive people together in the real world, IRL. It's not all just about digital. But the reality is, particularly with the epidemic of social isolation, a lot of people just aren't able to get out, or they're not in a place where they can find or meet with other people. And, you know, digital solutions really are the way to go. And, you know, that doesn't even get into the areas of like caregiving, where there's a huge deficit of caregivers, or they can be very expensive for a lot of people. And, you know, how is that going to be solved? And that's a whole nother conversation probably, but that I think is an area where AI coupled with, you know, embodied devices is going, I think that's going to solve a lot of the issues that we're facing today, probably within, I'm not going to make a prediction, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's in 5 years.
Interesting. So innovation and aging isn't one size fits all. Older adults come from different backgrounds, life experiences, which means solutions need to work for a wide range of people. How does the AgeTech Collaborative ensure that innovation remains inclusive and accessible across diverse populations? I know AARP as an organization is very committed to that, but how are you able to do that through the AgeTech Collaborative?
So we push that philosophy out to our startups who come through the program, and we do it in a number of ways, as well as products we build ourselves. We have access and provide access to a lot of different slices of audiences. And that can be through surveys, that can be through a number of different means, including we've got a huge bank of volunteers nationwide who are very diverse. So we're able to, through a variety of means, tap into different types of audiences, depending on, for example, your product, depending on who you're targeting. We can help you find the audiences to trial and in some cases, co-create your products with that right older adult. It's not always the case, but that's what we endeavor to do. So, that's an important, definitely important point, and something that not all product developers think about. So we try to, you know, coach people on, okay, you're trying to do this product. You think this is your audience. Yes, that makes sense. You've already built a prototype. Wait, you already have a pilot out and you haven't tested? So let's back up. Let's talk to your audience. Could be, you know, 65 to 70-year-old or 50 to 65-year-old females, you know, or what have you. And we're able to help focus on that audience. So the best product comes out the other side. I hope so. You know, we've definitely seen some successes from some of the companies that have come through, typically with startups. And we take early stage startups, generally pre-Series A. You know, and I in my startups as well, it can take you at least 5 years before you've got some sort of event or you realize this is not going to work. So we're, like I said, 2.5 years in, and we've already had some companies who've had at least a liquidity event, as they say, a successful exit. Some companies have decided to pivot and do something else. So we've definitely seen some success, and I think some of the companies have succeeded or are continuing to succeed because of our assistance, let's say. You know, we have to kind of be careful. We can't act in too much of a commercial mode, if you will. But we're here to kind of guide, provide, you know, assistance and guidance and connections, because, you know, we want these companies to succeed because we believe that they're moving the ball forward in terms of more modern products out into the market. When I pat myself on the back, is patting the whole team because we got an awesome, very small but awesome team that's really helped a lot of these companies move forward.
That's great. So, as we've discussed, as you've mentioned, the AgeTech Collaborative accelerates startups that are building solutions for the aging population. What qualities do you look for in a startup when deciding to support or invest in them?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, we do look at, you know, the solution that they're proposing. Is that something that we believe is an unmet need, or is not being met in a great way? We look at the quality of the founder. You know, it's something, there's definitely some quantitative to it, like what have they done before? It's helpful if they're a second-time founder, not a requirement at all. But you get a sense for people when they're pitching. Are they really in it? Is this a side project? We want people who are in it. We want people who are optimistic. You want some of that element that a lot of founders have, which is, you know, getting people to have a willing suspension of disbelief that this is going to happen. But we also want them, and I hesitate to use the word coachable, but that's kind of a word that, I think it's fair to say. So when we get a founder into our program and our team is sort of suggesting, you know, the audience might not be that, it might be a little like this, or certainly on the product specs, maybe making recommendations there, we want them to take it seriously, obviously. So we look for that in a founder. As far as their product, again, I said it's mostly early stage companies, but we're looking for traction. Even if it's a really early stage company, even if it's just to show an indication that people want this, are willing to pay for this, that's kind of important. There was a time when we very first started where we would take companies that really kind of just had a paper prototype and an idea. We don't really do that anymore. We move things forward a little bit because when we graduate these companies after they go through our accelerator into the collaborative and then get introduced to industry and investors, we want them to be ready. So the companies we bring in are a little bit more mature. So we hope that they have some traction. And I like to say, you know, do these founders have strong opinions held loosely? That might be a cliche, but what I mean by that is, you know, I'm talking to you, you're a founder, and you're like, Rick, this is what it is. This is how it's going to work. I know it. And I present data that's contrary, and you think and say, all right, we're going to pivot, as opposed to saying, screw that data, we're moving forward.
Yep.
So strong opinions held loosely is a phrase that I kind of think about.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that I look for.
Sure. Now, you know, when you're, and I think you mentioned that quarterly you take in a new class or group, you know, admittedly, I'm picturing like a Shark Tank kind of, you know, scenario or setting. And I realize that's done for, you know, to make good TV. But can you describe a little about how that works when they're coming in?
Sure. We run pitch competitions virtually and in person. In person, they're a little more visual. We also do a very highly visual one at CES called HTech After Dark. And we usually get, you know, somebody, a celebrity sometimes to host it. And there's a lot of glitz and there's a lot of people cheering and so on. But typical pitches are, you know, like I said, online like this. And it's pretty formal. We have to keep, you know, keep everything's very balanced. People come on, they get a few minutes to pitch. They frankly get cut off if they go over. And then we have a panel of judges that includes some from AARP. We always have an outside person to keep things balanced. They get judged. They're not told what it is right off the bat. But after the pitches and the judging happens, we convene internally and sort of determine, okay, of those 15 companies, well, the first 120, 150 companies might apply to pitch for one of the pitches. We only invite maybe 12 to come in and pitch, maybe 8 to 12. Okay. Then we watch them pitch, and then we have the panel of judges, as I mentioned. We'll ask them some questions, move on. Afterward, we sort of have a discussion over which ones we think we'd like to investigate more and invite into the accelerator program. And sometimes that's none of them. Sure. Sometimes it's maybe three. And, you know, for the most part, when we invite them in, they accept. Now, this is virtual. They don't have to come into our office like some accelerator programs. Some of the companies, because we have such volume who are interested, which is awesome, we'll say to them, can't do it this time, but please pitch again next quarter. So that happens a lot. We've had a lot of companies actually who pitched like three times until they got in.
Tenacity.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I'm assuming each time they kind of refined it from the time before.
They do. They do. And again, sometimes it's just volume. Like we have a small team. We'd like to be able to bring in, if all 12 are awesome, we'd like to bring all 12 in, but we can't, you know, always, you know, it's a balance. Yep. So we do sometimes say, you know, great presentation. We really like your solution. Please do pitch again next time.
Sure. So is there a common thread for the entrepreneurs who focus on aging services for, or older adults?
One thing I noticed, I wouldn't say it's ubiquitous, but a lot of them are in this because they've had firsthand experiences. Whether it's their mother went through a situation, their grandfather, their companion, and they realize that the system is broken, or there wasn't a product that existed that met their need. We've heard this over and over and over again. And that's often, it's sort of binary. On one hand, that creates a very passionate, very strong entrepreneur who has a strong point of view and a lot of tenacity, as you mentioned. And they're like all in to solve this problem because they personally experienced it and they're emotionally involved. The other side of the binary, sometimes it can skew their perception. And that's where we try to be a little bit more independent voice. Because
I can see where it become more emotional at that point.
Or very emotional.
Invested in a different way.
Understandably so, particularly with issues around dementia and dementia care, you know, a whole host of issues. A lot of it, you know, we focus on fintech and health tech and other areas, but particularly in the health tech space, healthcare space, a lot of entrepreneurs emerge from personal experience. So we have that kind of binary nature. It's also interesting that we've had a hard time early on reaching some of the bigger VCs, let's call them Sand Hill or, you know, Silicon Valley VCs, who weren't really interested in age tech or didn't grok it, let's say. But there, a lot of them are, you know, starting to get experiences themselves with their parents. And what that means is, you know, they themselves are wondering, well, why doesn't a solution exist? Which is great, because then a light bulb goes off for them. And when we're able to connect with them, they realize, okay, there's somebody working on this. And we'd like to, you know, hopefully be able to bring them in.
And it becomes very personal at that point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So what are some of the biggest challenges that startups face in developing products for the aging population?
Well, certainly investment, capital. Most startups, many of them are bootstrapped, and then friends and family, but getting capital is always a challenge. Finding the right talent to join your team. Again, age tech, just over the past few years, I would say, has become more in vogue, partly because people are realizing the business opportunity. But also, I think, and we have a little bit to do with this, there's a bit more sex appeal to some of the solutions.
That's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's helpful as well. So that's helpful in getting, say, co-founders or other people to to work on your solution. And, you know, often people, you know, want to join a startup. They like to work on really exciting, interesting things. And often they want to be utilizing leading edge technology. That's just how it is. That's, of course, not across the board. But I bring that up because what we're trying to do is, again, as I mentioned before, demonstrate leading edge technology can be utilized in a very accessible and useful way. And so those two messages come together, I think, and just help get people more willing to be involved in some of these solutions and startups.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. So you referenced earlier about how, you know, you're looking for people who are willing to pivot, you know, based on what the market is saying. Can you share an example of a startup that pivoted successfully after engaging with the AgeTech Collaborative?
Well, I mean, one example, I guess, is kind of an example. There was a company with a product called Eve. And it was a physical phone, and you'd pick it up and you would talk to an AI. And their idea there was older adults accustomed to a physical device, but being able to plug it into an AI companion to get help, so on, was interesting. But they realized that maybe it wasn't scalable. And also, older adults use cell phones. More than, you know, rotary phones. And so I think they pivoted to something much more broad that allows their solution to be available on multiple platforms. So I think that, you know, I don't think we can take total credit for that, but that's an example.
But if nothing else, you probably opened their mind to, you know, what some different possibilities might be.
Yeah. And I think that happens quite a bit, because that's part of why we exist, is to provide data. And our, you know, ARP has been around for over 60 years. So we have a moat, and that is our experience and our data and our research and our content. And that's why people come to us and be like, how do I crack this market, or how do I, you know, and so on. So that's, yeah. And it's not really a pivot, but very quick. You know, we've also had some companies, startups, who have, through their own efforts, really, we've made connections, but their own product excellence, have done deals with AARP. Presidio is one company. It's a digital vault. They came through the collaborative, and, you know, they went through our process, and they got connected with folks at AARP and worked together, and their product is now offered as a premium service to members.
That's amazing.
So yeah, that's also an interesting avenue for companies.
Sure. So you know, AgeTech is still a young and a fast growing space, you know, a couple years plus, with plenty of needs yet to be addressed. Where do you see the greatest unmet opportunities for older adults in the AgeTech sector?
I think we still have a way to go on either retrofitting or building, for lack of a better term, smart homes. People want to stay in their home as long as they possibly can, i.e. forever. So how do we help that happen? Technology or human support? We know human support is very expensive, and also, you know, it's a challenge. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, both in point solutions, which we've got many in the collaborative, from fall detection to remote monitoring to smart toilet seats, all those sort of thing. And then pulling it together into a data feed, I think that area is a really interesting opportunity that some are trying to do. So you have point solutions. I also am interested in like constellation of products. In other words, you know, I'm in my home. It was built in the 80s. It's not a smart home. I want my mom to be able to live there safely for, you know, for forever. How do I do that? Well, maybe I can retrofit the entire place to have privacy-enabled monitoring, perhaps having ambient awareness technology that she can actually call out to with her voice and get responses whenever she needs, or everything from has she taken her medication? Do I know that? Do I get alerts about that? These are different, you know, technologies that exist independently. Bringing them all together, I think, is going to be the challenge going forward.
That's a great point.
I keep thinking about retrofitting homes. Obviously new homes, there's a big opportunity to build homes smart, but technology moves fast, and to be able to, you know, retrofit and upgrade, I think that's some really big opportunities. And we've got some demonstration centers, one at CCRC called Asbury, where we've taken one of their apartments and put a lot of our products in the apartment to show what it would look like to have a HTEC enabled living space. So that is a big area. I also think, this is maybe a bit more controversial, but AI and AI companionship and embodied AI, you might say robots. I am pretty bullish on that. And I won't name specific companies, but we do have a couple in the collaborative, Boston Dynamics is one, is working on some great robots, among others, including some exoskeleton companies. But I think these robotic companions, whether they look like humans or something else, that someone can talk to, but it can also be functional for people in their home. That's, to me, it's obvious. That's going to be a huge, huge opportunity. So I look forward to that.
Absolutely. Now, do you know Bob Kramer? He was a co-founder of the National Investment Centers for Seniors Housing and also Nexus Insights. He was talking about the exoskeletons and a lot of the age tech that is coming. You know, some of it is being used in Japan out of necessity.
Yes, and such. Hands away out of us.
Yep. So, but it's going to be a fascinating, few years ahead of us, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. We just got to get people ready for it. And,
absolutely. So this is a question that I ask every roundtable guest. What are you looking forward to as you age?
I'm looking for, I'm excited by potential drug discoveries, thanks to generative AI. I think everybody's excited by that. It shows a lot of promise. I'm not leaning into the end of aging, live forever, but, curing disease, that's really exciting. As I get older, there's an expectation of slowing down. I had a startup not too long ago, and I wasn't that old, but it was difficult talking to investors because they look at you and think you're midlife. They don't want to invest. They're ageist.
Interesting.
Ageism is alive and well.
I'm assuming that was before you came to AARP.
Yes, before I came to AARP. The reason I bring it up is I'm not slowing down. I'm being more productive. I'm going to say almost than ever, particularly with my, building things with some of the new tools that are available, using AI largely, but other tools as well. Working on building the collaborative, mentoring startups, mentoring students at Georgetown University. I'm looking forward to, defying expectations and maybe, encouraging others who are getting into their 50s and 60s that now is not a time to slow down. Now is time to lean in to opportunity. Well, so, I don't know. those things come to mind.
So I'm curious, you know, you mentioned, you know, your own personal experience about, you know, being an entrepreneur. Does the Age Tech Collaborative specifically foster having older adults who have ideas come into the collaborative, or at least be able to pitch their ideas?
Yeah, we don't discriminate, but we do attract a lot of, frankly, older entrepreneurs. It just so happens that is the case. We actually have some breakdown on the demos of our founders. We have a lot of female founders. We have a lot of, you know, depending on how you define it, but over 50-year-old entrepreneurs who are founders.
That's tremendous.
But we don't necessarily target that, but just by dint of what we're doing and who we are, at this stage, we do find people who are, as I said before, they're at midlife, their parent experienced something traumatic or bad or what have you, and they're like, you know, I have the capacity to try to solve this. So yeah, we do see a lot of people at midlife and older adults.
Sure. So what do a lot of companies often get wrong from your perspective when designing products or services for older adults?
I think they don't engage with their audience, their older adult audience, early enough. As a product builder myself, and this is a little bit contradictory, I tend to put myself as the user and try to embody that user and build products from there. But I think if you haven't been building products for 30 years, like I have, it's crucial to be talking to that audience in a really smart way, not just saying, hey, would you use this? But instead tease out what are their pain points around what you think is the problem. Understand the nuance and talk to a variety of people in that space, if you will. So I think a lot of companies tend to overlook that, or they build something out and then it's almost like checking a box after the fact. They'll say, let's run this by some older people. And you know, that's probably a mistake.
Sure. So how does the Age Tech Collaborative recommend or foster incorporating older adults themselves into the product development process?
Yeah. For our startups, we offer opportunities to talk to audiences, surveys, and other methodologies. We, of course, encourage it. We have ways of doing that. And we've actually done engagements also with some large corporates, including a couple of the very largest tech companies, to bring in volunteers, older adults, to work with them. So they, when they're developing their products, they're taking older adults, needs in mind. And I don't know that I'm allowed to say who they are, but you can probably guess they're probably, you know, from one of the big seven. Or sure. A few from the big seven.
That's fair. So, you know, there's a common perception that older adults are hesitant or even resistant to new technology. You talked, earlier in our conversation about some of your thoughts there, but are there misconceptions about technology adoption among older adults that you'd like to debunk?
Yeah. We have all kinds of data. We do research all the time. Our research group is world class. We do an annual, I think it's annual tech survey. And last year, there's some data points like 67% of older adults made a tech purchase last year. That's two-thirds. You know, by 2030 is a data point that we like to point out. Tech spending among people 50 plus is expected to reach $120 billion. You know, and this was an interesting one that for me anyway, 35% of older adults owns a home assistant, whether it's an Alexa or Google Voice or what have you. So, you know, I'd like to dispel the myth that older adults are arm's length from technology, not engaging, because they are.
Sure. Now, are there particular reasons that people might not want to engage? And for example, when I talk to older adults, a common theme is privacy. And I think, you know, concern about that in the, you know, some of the, you know, the smart speakers and that sort of genre. But a lot, I do see, now this is anecdotal, but a lot are embracing it. But I also see a lot of folks that are just concerned about that privacy, perhaps more so than younger adults, although I do see it, you know, in the younger population as well.
Yeah, you see, you definitely see it across populations. Maybe the younger people are a little more flip about it, like, all my data is going to be out there anyway. But privacy and fraud, those are two areas that AARP has been kind of at the forefront of arguing for and defending against in terms of fraud for many years, and continues to do that. And we try to carry that as well. AARP does it with content and research and so on. We try to do that by developing, cultivating startup companies that are respecting that and demonstrating privacy and security, you know, Presidio is a smart locker or smart that I mentioned before that sort of embodies that. But I have other feelings about this as well. My experience developing a lot of leading edge products back in the day, all the way up to today, from, you know, way early on when I was at America Online. I think there was a survey or something, internal survey about, do you want to be able to show friends of yours that you're online? And everybody said, no, that's a huge violation of my privacy. You do not want that. Well, that became what was called a buddy list, and what we called presence. So what started off as, oh my God, no, to, oh, I have to have this. And then you move forward to GPS location detection and all the products that utilize that, so you can see where your family and friends are. That started with hair on fire, privacy violations, to a must have. And, you know, all along the way, we're seeing that, of course, with AI now. Now, there's valid reasons for that, because there's some bad players who will exploit and take advantage. There's also, you know, spills of data that some of the biggest companies in the world are, you know, not complicit, but it's their
vulnerable
fault. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Older adults, as well as anybody, has every reason to be concerned, cautious about their privacy and about fraud. But we do, you know, with our startups, we do try to make that point very clear that if you may have only one chance, particularly as an early stage company. And if you violate it, you're done. And we have, you know, frankly, we have the right to remove companies from the collaborative if they're doing something in violation. And we, in fact, we did that.
I was just going to ask if you've had to do that without naming any names, of course, but
we did, a company, I think it was late last year. So yes, we have done that. It's not fun, but that's just how it is. If we're going to have, you know, the right kind of environment, we reserve the right to do that.
That says a lot about the integrity of the organization and the collaborative too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we didn't go and, you know, market the fact that we did it. You know, I think some people may have heard about it. I don't know, but yes, we do maintain standards. If people violate it, then they're not welcome in the collaborative. But back to your point, people should always be cautious and aware and, you know, trust that what we do at the collaborative with our startups is we encourage that, obviously. We're not here necessarily to sort of pen test every product, but it's something that is part of our, you know, part of our kind of coaching and part of the accelerator program to make sure that people are really thinking about this.
Sure, sure. How important is simplicity versus sophistication in building solutions for older adults?
Kind of gets back to what I mentioned before, make the technology disappear. Mm-hmm. Simplicity.
I love that.
You know, I think of, I've always, even when I was building products for, let's say, a much younger audience who allegedly were more savvy, I would always sort of lean toward simplicity over complexity. Because even though you might look at it and think there's not much here, the trick is to hide the power of the technology under the covers. So the magic, you know, sort of happens for the consumer kind of without them realizing it. So I definitely land on simplicity forward, you know, complex technology under the covers.
Makes sense. Now, we've talked a little bit about social isolation and, you know, certainly some of the concerns that folks have with fraud. How does the Age Tech Collaborative address issues like social isolation, financial security, healthcare access, those sorts of things?
Social isolation, I think, as I mentioned before, is a big area of focus for AARP writ large, but also for us. And so we have run in the past pitch competitions that were themed for companies trying to focus on solutions that would help people who are suffering from that.
That's amazing.
So, that's one way we've gone directly after it. You know, once we get the companies in, we also coach them. We're able to give them a lot of kind of research and data about the space, and the problems, so they can, you know, tune their solution to meet the need a little better, we hope. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Now, how can Age Tech support family caregivers as well as older adults themselves, you know, in all of these areas, healthcare access, you know, social isolation, et cetera? How can it support the caregivers as they're caring for their loved ones?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. Caregivers, in some ways, kind of overlooked by people, you know, maybe looking to start a company to address this market, but they don't realize it's a giant space, and these people are doing, as they say, God's work, but they are overwhelmed. Family caregivers and professional caregivers. There's a lot of turnover in professional caregiving. It's hard work. It's very challenging. Family caregivers, my sister, a little bit of me, but much more my sister became a family caregiver for my mom. And it was, as people probably listening, I'm sure some of them realize, it's incredibly emotionally taxing. It's physically taxing. It's difficult all around. So this is a big problem, because people are, you know, there's the sandwich people caring for children and their parents. And so we definitely look at entrepreneurs who are trying to figure out solutions, everything from, you know, marketplaces to get support, trusted support, for families who need caregivers, or applications that help caregivers mentally, to help, you know, and then also, as I mentioned before, different kinds of potentially embodied AI to supplement caregivers, to help them do their job and maybe do some of the more mundane things on their behalf. To help them be, frankly, less burnt out. That is a big, gnarly, growing problem. And it's one that we more and more are focusing on, trying to figure out, you know, how to address it. And I don't think there's like one avenue, but, so that's why we have like a number of different companies taking different, actions to try to address these issues. So, and also, you know, with some of the bigger companies in the collaborative, some of the corporates, we do get an opportunity to articulate that your employees, you know, you need to have empathy for employees who are caring for, say, older adults.
Yep. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about, you have 600 or so organizations that are part of the collaborative. You're you know, working toward 1,000. How do you see the collaborative evolving over the next 5 to 10 years? It's only a couple of years in, and you've already, I'm sure, evolved a whole lot from where you started. But where do you see it going? If you had a crystal ball.
Well, of course, yeah, of course, we want to get to critical mass. How do you define that? Well, I'm not quite sure, but I know we're not there yet. I like to say 1,000 companies gets us to a point where we have gotten, you know, X percent of the Fortune 500. I want to get to a point where we've got the majority of CCRCs, Fortune 500, major VCs, and attracting the finest startups, those who might otherwise go to, you know, some of the other accelerators out there, Y Combinator. Think about us. We actually have some companies who've gone through Y Combinator and Techstars. And, you know, they really like our experience. So that's good news. But I want to get to a point where we have saturation in all of those different areas, including major, you know, startups who many times have a great solution for older adults, but they don't realize it because they're not marketing it toward this audience. They're trying to market toward a different audience.
Sure.
And there's been a couple of occasions where you get people like, you know, this audience would be much more applicable if you'd be willing to focus on that audience and make some tweaks and market it differently. So we want companies to be thinking about coming here maybe before, say, going to Y Combinator, as an example. Once we, we achieve that, I'm going to feel like that's another level of success. And, you know, finally, this is a B2B marketplace, I guess you could say.
Sure.
You know, I do think there is an opportunity for both ARP members and consumers who are interested in tech to have direct interaction with some of the things that we're doing in the collaborative. So that might be an opportunity for us as well to open it up to, to a much broader audience.
Sure, sure. So, you know, on this podcast, we've often heard guests say that people don't usually set out to build a career in senior living or aging services. But once they find the work, it turns out to be deeply meaningful and rewarding. What inspired you personally to focus your career on innovation and aging?
I was at Politico. I was kind of head of product there. And my mother was diagnosed with dementia. She didn't live near me. As I mentioned before, my sister lived near her in Maine. And I got to watch the deterioration of my mom as millions of people have to suffer through. And serendipitously, the opportunity to come help run what was called the Innovation Lab at ARP came up. And so I jumped at the opportunity to try to make an impact in that area.
Hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So how do you foster a culture of innovation within the AgeTech Collaborative?
Well, I try to encourage people on the team to try things, to, you know, the cliche is to embrace failure. Maybe not embrace it, but don't be afraid of it. That's the only way you're going to kind of advance forward, is to have things that need to pivot So I really push people to try new things, and make sure they know that there's not going to be a negative impact. In fact, I would rather be a negative impact for people who don't try new things and try to, and take risks. I do my best to, you know, give people a cloak of security to take a lot of risks. And, you know, things go horribly wrong in a test environment or what have you. I'll take the blame for it. That's kind of my philosophy there.
That's a great point, because if you don't take risks, you don't, you know, take some leaps of faith, you never know how far you can go.
Yeah. You know, an omelet is not made inside of a shell. You got to break the eggs.
That's great.
Especially in a big company. You know, you can find yourself breaking a lot of eggs without realizing it, but that's the only way things are going to move forward.
Good point. So what advice would you give to entrepreneurs looking to enter the age tech space?
I would say, first I would take a look at our directory of startups at agetechcollaborative.org, and kind of get a feel for what are entrepreneurs doing? What are they focusing on? What are their solutions? And get a sense for the areas that are kind of like in a heat map, are drawing heat. Do any of those areas spark an interest? Do you have experience in that area? And you know, that can be helpful in clarifying. You can also get someone to be like, you know, this is not for me. So that's one way to do it, is to look in the area, but also think about friction in your own life, particularly as it relates to, let's say, depending on how old you are, your parent or maybe yourself. And that can be minor things like how a doorknob turns. And, you know, for, let's say, someone with arthritis, that's problematic. You know, okay, how do I solve that? Or how do I address that? So really pay attention to the small things throughout your day, the small friction points, because even those small points of friction or pain points, if you want to call them that, or irritations, typically you kind of just, you let it roll off your back and like move on. This is how things are. Well, it doesn't have to be that way.
Sure.
Fix it.
Yeah.
Come up with a solution. Develop a product. And making that leap from, oh, this is an annoyance, to, no, it doesn't have to be, is what we want people to be able to do.
Great point. So the last question, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self? I ask every Roundtable Talk guest this as we end. What do you wish you would have, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
This is kind of personal, but I'll put it out there. I think my career thus far has been, I think, marked by a lot of risk taking, all the way back to when I left a pretty safe job to take over a magazine called BBS Magazine, which was the precursor to the internet, BBS's. And was sort of yelled at by my boss, like, the internet, well, that's CB radios. That's going to go away and die. So I would say, if you're willing to take risks and embrace that and take chances, because that's how things move forward, you also have to expect that you're probably not going to find yourself in the C-suite of a company. A startup, that's different.
Sure.
But inside of an organization, that's generally, you know, it's the people who navigate deftly through the politics and are not taking the big risks that shoot to the top.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's sort of been an observation of mine. Maybe it's an excuse, but I think, you know, they're not diametrically opposed, but it does seem like there's two paths. Either, you know, well, there's more than toothpaste, definitely if you're going to charge after innovation and taking risks on things and, you know, doing what you got to do to get things done, you know, you might be canceling yourself out for opportunities in the higher executive level.
Great advice. Good. Well, thank you again. Really appreciate your time. Today's roundtable guest was Rick Robinson, Vice President and General Manager of the AgeTech Collaborative from AARP. I'm Derek Dunham. Thanks to Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer. And Rick, thanks again. Really appreciate your time.
It's awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Take care.
All right.